Welcome everybody to Reds Ramblings. I have with me today Barbara from over in the Netherlands. Netherlands has a lot. So this one's going to be a little bit different than usual. I'm not going to go through this, that, and the other. Barbara's born and raised over in the Netherlands. So we're going to mainly stick to what she already knows to help us give a better example and detailed description about some of the stuff. So Barbara, real quick, go ahead and let people know a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, thank you, Jamie, for having me on the show. I am both a transformation coach and an acupuncturist. I've been born and raised in the Netherlands, as you said, but I like to travel and work, so I'm more like a digital nomad. And I help people who felt like they were weird or strange for most of their life to not only accept themselves, but to also embrace who they are, become proud of who they are, and then create a life for themselves that makes their heart sing.
Okay, so you said three very interesting things right there that I didn't know about before we started this. So I want to jump into the first one. You're an acupuncturist.
Yes, I am.
Okay, because I've always wanted to try that. We used to have one at one of the local malls. There used to be a little shop in there that did it when I was young. Mm. And I wanted to go in, but my mom probably wouldn't have allowed it. But I've always wanted to try. I don't think I know a lot of people go to like try and get rid of stuff like either arthritis or pains or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Is it something then, since you do it, is it something that you would recommend for someone who just wants to try it? Because I've just always wanted to know what it felt like, honestly.
Definitely. There is nothing you can do wrong with acupuncture, mm-hmm. because unlike Western medicine, acupuncture focuses on bringing balance back into your mm-hmm. entire system, mm-hmm. and the society being the way it is and the stress levels being the way they are, we are always out of balance. So there's always something that I can do for someone with acupuncture. And what you mentioned, those are the physical complaints that I can treat with acupuncture, but I've also specialized mm-hmm. in what I like to call emotional acupuncture. Okay. So I can also help people, for instance, with a burnout or that experience what they call physical complaints that they cannot find a cause for, because most mm-hmm. of the time they are caused by emotions or mental things going on in their head that cause physical complaints to manifest itself.
All right. Well, if I'm ever in the Netherlands, I'm going to call you up because I want to try that really bad. I've always wanted to do that. Second thing you mentioned that caught me, the phrasing intrigued me. Digital nomad. Explain I think I have an idea of what you mean by that. Explain in your words what that means.
Well, digital nomad means that everything from my coaching business I've created mm. now online. So the only thing I need is internet and my laptop. So that allows me to travel. Of course, I cannot take my acupuncture with me, although yes. I have been doing that because everywhere I go, I also treat people with acupuncture wherever I am. So that's kind of cool. But it means yes. just that I work digitally with the internet and my laptop, and I travel everywhere I want to be.
So kind of like what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, if it's what I'm thinking, then I'm kind of, I guess, a digital nomad too. Because I got you from the Netherlands. I got someone from Ireland in a few hours after this. I've spoken to people all over the place as well. So I guess in a sense, kind of a digital nomad myself. I like that.
In your mind, because actual mm-hmm. digital nomad, it requires you to leave your country.
I can't do that. Can't do that right now. But I get what you're saying. Yes. Okay. The other thing you mentioned that I kind of want to highlight a little bit is some of the other work you said you did where you try and take someone who feels like they're weird or strange in a way and make them feel good about themselves in whatever type of weird, strange way that may be. Mm-hmm. Explain that a little bit, because I consider myself an odd individual for various mm-hmm. reasons. I'm sure mm-hmm. everyone has a little twerk or a little quirk about them, but I'm cool with it. I think it makes me, and I'm, my wife would say I have a big ego, which is kind of true. But so I feel like I've already embraced my oddness, my quirkiness. So I guess if you don't mind explaining a little bit of how you go about doing that for other individuals.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think then you are one of the fortunate ones. I remember that for most of my life, I felt weird and I felt strange and mm-hmm. I felt like I didn't fit in. And there was a time in my life when I was really young, or my teens actually, until my teens, that I seriously thought that there was something wrong with me, because mm-hmm. I couldn't find any connection to the people around me. I didn't think like them. I didn't act like them. I didn't have the same norms, the same values, the same interests. And I also noticed other things that were different. Like, I was able to walk into a room and the conversation died, and I knew what had been said. I knew who had said what. Mm-hmm. And I also knew who had been hurt and who had been happy. I feel other people's pains and other people's emotions like they are my own. And it took me a while to discover that it was not actually what I was feeling, but it was somebody else's emotions or feelings that I was feeling. So that is the weird and the strange part that I am mentioning. And a lot of us, we have heard that we shouldn't be so sensitive. We should learn to grow a thicker skin. Mm. We should learn to let things go more easily. We should learn to not take everything so personally. And for me, that created this image that I am not good enough the way I am, that I needed to change. So that's what I did. I denied a very big part of myself, and I turned myself into somebody that I thought other people would love, other people would mm-hmm. like, yeah. other people would want to be friends with, other people would want to hire for a job, all these types of things. And then I basically turned myself into a version of myself that's not me. Mm. In the beginning, I thought that I had success with it. But there comes a time in everybody's life when you are not being genuine, when you are not embracing who you actually are, quirky, strange things and all, that it starts to fester. Yeah. And that was what happened in my life. I couldn't keep up the charade, and I was miserable. I was very alone, very lonely. And I kept thinking, is this really all there is to life? Because if this is life, then I'm not sure I want to live it. Mm. And then I ended up in a severe burnout as a consequence of all the things that I've been telling you, combined with too much going on at work, and then my relationship of 7 years suddenly ending, and then that catapulted me into an area of my life, or a time in my life, where I felt just overwhelmed by emotions. And because I had shut down that part of myself, the sensitive part, the feeling part, I couldn't handle all these emotions. Because I've always put them away, but so much was happening that I couldn't put them back in the closet again. I couldn't put them in a box and close the lid. So I was forced to deal with them, and I was ill-prepared because I didn't know how. And in that time, my boss told me, in between all the things that he was telling me, yeah, but you are an HSP because my wife is an HSP and you are exactly the same. And then he went on with the rest of his conversation. And I thought, are you calling me a name? And I thought, well, that might be logical because I ended up in a burnout and you must be really disappointed in me. So I immediately took the blame to myself. But the term HSP, it stuck with me. And I decided to Google it because I wanted to find out what he was calling me. I discovered it was highly sensitive person. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh. And then I started to read about what a highly sensitive person is and what it means. And then, you know, it felt like I was coming home to myself. Mm. And the more I discovered about myself and the better I started to know myself, the more things clicked into place. And the more I understood things that I previously couldn't understand about myself. And that were the first steps into accepting who I am, embracing my weird and quirkiness, and now actually using them to my advantage to help other people, to be like a beacon for other people who feel the same way, and showing them that it's okay to be who you are and that you can have a happy, fulfilled life when you are yourself. Or moreover, it's a requirement to be yourself and to love yourself and to be proud of yourself if you ever want that chance of having a life that you really love that makes you happy.
I can 100% see why Lex Vushko spoke so highly of you. Because she got me onto you, and then you did her podcast.
Yes.
And I haven't listened to it yet, but I did a podcast with her on Serbia, and me and her got along great. And So from hearing, remembering what I know of her, because me and her still talk every now and then. We talked a little bit this morning. And nice. From hearing this from you today, just now, I can 100% see why she spoke so highly of you. Because basically, if correct me if I'm wrong, from my understanding is being very empathetic, like you said, is it something nowadays that is widely respected, really? It's like you said, a lot of people like, oh, you know, grow up, get over it, blah, blah, blah. Kind of go with the norm, right?
Yes, and I've noticed it's a bad, dirty word. Mm-hmm. Being sensitive is something that you stay far away from. It's not something to be proud of.
Yeah, because I know I'm from here in America, and this is kind of going to go off topic of what this podcast was going to be about, but I don't care. It's my show. I'm going to do what I want. I feel, and I've mentioned this numerous times, I think I mentioned it on the Serbia episode with Lex, is that's kind of where America's at right now. A good chunk of it is just single-minded, not caring about those around them. Because I kind of feel what you're saying. I'm that type of guy. If I walk in, and not necessarily the room gets quiet, but if something's going on, I can feel it. Like, oh, something's happening. You know, I notice that there's a change in the air, basically. Yes. And I never used to be like that. I remember growing up, I was that super thick skin. Nothing really bothered me. But then I guess maturing, I softened up, I guess you could say. But I'm able to see things around me and adjust to them in ways I couldn't before. Like I can sympathize with people, empathize with people. Mm-hmm. I know it's not just me. You know, it's not just my family. There are other people out there, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I like that. I definitely like that. I hope whatever you got going on is going on well, because more of that type of, I guess, education is definitely needed, mm-hmm. I'll say. Because I've said that numerous times on I don't know how many shows that I've done at this point, where, especially in this country for sure, I'm assuming worldwide as well, that sort of acknowledgement of those around you and realizing it's more than just you. You know, there are other people out there. Is sorely lacking these days. It is a much needed change that needs to happen. So big props to you. I hope you continue that. I enjoy that. After this, I'm going to listen to you and Lex's and see, get a better idea of it. Cause I like where you're going,
but
no problem. I love that. Yes. So now we'll get to the nitty gritty of what this show is about.
Yes.
This is at the Netherlands.
The Netherlands
over there in is part of the UK or is it like just outside the UK?
No, it's part of Europe, so it's outside of the UK. UK is on the other side of the pond, basically.
Okay, so it's part of Europe. Okay.
Yes.
I had American education. I'm sorry.
It's the same. They are basically neighbors. We are just separated by a bunch of water.
That is one thing that totally caught me off guard, by the way. That was definitely the biggest thing that I read that I was like, whoa. Is a good chunk of the Netherlands is built upon marshy ground. And the cities like Amsterdam, I think it said the entire city of Amsterdam is built upon wooden poles.
Yes.
And
on the water, but because the dikes that we built, it's dry land and it's on poles whenever things start to flood again. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm reading into this. I was at work reading into it and this, you know, and they started building the city hundreds of years ago. I don't remember exactly when. But I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, who walks upon a marshy ground, you know, landmass, whatever you want to call it, and be like, I'm going to build a city here. And the guy next to you is like, where? Like, it's number water, dude. Like, what? I'm like, oh, no, I'll just stick millions of poles in the ground, put everything on stilts. What? Like, to me, that just seems insane when I hear about it. And when you look at it, There are a lot of the houses and buildings are still like original, at least from what I think are original. They look old, right?
Yes. Yes.
I did read that a lot. Anything new is built, you know, with a concrete foundation and steel poles and whatnot, but they're still doing the whole stilts and poles thing to this day with building stuff. So I gotta wonder, kind of like you said, when it floods, are portions of the Netherlands still sinking every now and then, I would imagine?
No, because we've built dikes and irrigation systems. You know, the Netherlands is a very small country, and we have more than 17 million people in it, which is a whole lot. So we needed to reclaim as much land as we could, because otherwise people would be living on top of each other. And we are already living on top of each other with the high rises, of course. But that's how initially the land got reclaimed from the ocean, because we needed it. Mm-hmm. And we are very good at engineering. We have the most clever minds, and they just found a way to reclaim that land. And we also work with what we call a sluice, and it's like a water gateway. We can open and close it whenever it needs, and then we can regulate the level of the water in the entire Netherlands. And that way we can make sure that the Netherlands doesn't flood again.
So you have a countrywide system for that?
Yes.
That is, I did not come across that. That is wild. That I could see like citywide, you know, system for that, but a countrywide.
Yes.
That is wild. You were mentioned about building on top of each other and how jam-packed it is compared to the size of it. I was looking at one of the ones, I think it's called the Cube Houses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in Rotterdam.
Okay, Rotterdam. Yeah, I was looking into that, and I looked into one. I thought it was just, you know, some architect, you know, wanting to do something wild. But no, there was a reason for it. It was a road in between, and the two plots on the side of the road were deemed residential, so they kind of had to do it. The way they had to do it was the way he ended up doing it, basically. But like you said, some of the engineering, because some of the architecture you guys have over there with the cube houses and some of the other stuff is just not something you see every day in other parts of the world, definitely.
We are very inventive, and we, as small as our country is, we also sailed out across the world, and we occupied Indonesia, for instance, and a lot of other islands. We even went to America to colonize it. Mm-hmm. So the Dutch have been salespeople and inventive and adventurous all of their lives.
Yeah, because I had an interview with a lady from South Africa, and she was telling me about the origins of Afrikaans, the language that they speak there, and she kept throwing Dutch in it. Yes. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, what is she talking about? Dutch is way up there, you know? But then, after I looked into it, I was like, oh, okay. And so, the origins of Afrikaans down there, the Dutch settled it first, and that's why it's widely spoken. But then they've kind of added their own little cultural differences, and now it's evolved into Afrikaans. I was not aware of that until just recently when I did that South African episode.
Yes, as small as we are, we leave a big footprint.
Big footprint, yes. That was another thing, is the inventions that you guys have done. Like for one, I think it was like videotape. Philips, if you remember, is a Netherlands company.
Yes.
So CDs, videotapes, I think cassette tapes as well. Mm. You guys partnered with Sony on all of those and come across with the invention of all that. So if you think of modern music as we know it, it's all thanks to people from the Netherlands, which is kind of cool. I love that.
Definitely. But also beer, you know, Heineken is one of the most famous beer brands across the world, and it's also very Dutch.
It is? Well, I don't drink beer, so it's not something I would really look into it. Yeah. And the only thing I know, and I looked into it, and apparently it's frowned upon, I guess, as a tourist, if I was to go over there and start gibbering off. Because for a long time, I thought Amsterdam was in Germany. It's not. And if I was to have gone over there and like mentioned that, the Dutch and the Germans don't like to be compared to one another at all. I can only imagine it happens quite often, because here I was before this thinking that for a long time.
I actually have a very funny story about that.
Go ahead. Yes.
I went to Madeira and I rented a room at somebody else's house through Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And when I arrived, the guy told me, "Ah, yes, but you're from Germany, and the other guy renting a room here is also from Germany, so you will get along famously." And then the other guy came, and he turned out to be Belgian. So we were neither German.
Oh, man.
He called us German both.
Yeah, like, I've had so many interviews, and I have some lined up with people from various countries and parts of Europe. And I keep forgetting that there's so many countries in Europe.
Yes.
And just because you're from one doesn't mean you know anything about the country over and vice versa. There's obviously a huge difference. But yeah, like growing up out, I don't know if it's how Amsterdam is portrayed in American, you know, TVs and movies. Or maybe just me being ignorant. I don't know. I always just assumed Amsterdam was in Germany and Netherlands. I always related clogs with Netherlands, which I know is a big tourist type of souvenir thing that you guys have.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing is tulips.
Yes.
Tulips is huge over in the Netherlands, and they're not originally from there.
No, that's right. They are imported.
Yes, down from
the... We are famous for it. Tulips and wooden shoes, usually.
Tulips, wooden shoes. Yeah, because tulips were brought in from during the Ottoman Empire days. I love anything about the Ottoman Empire. But looking at that, and then, yeah, you see, like, you guys have flower festivals and all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
And gardens for, you know, as far as the eye can see of all that kind of stuff. It's beautiful to look at, definitely. What is, though, that town or towns? I'm speaking of one in particular. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head. That is kind of like a, it's canals. Like, it has no roads. It's nothing but canals.
We have multiple ones that
yes.
have lots with canals. Amsterdam is also one, but there are also roads. Mm-hmm. One that is solely canals.
It might not have been solely canals, but I know they call it the Venice of the Netherlands. Giethoorn?
Giethoorn, yes.
Giethoorn. Is that a place you've been to?
Yes, my mother's family is actually from there.
Okay.
Yes.
So how is it, is that main, does, I'm assuming it does have a few roads though, right?
Yes, definitely. That's why I didn't click immediately. But yes.
But with canals, do the people, I would assume then a majority, if you're from there and you live in that town, that cars aren't really a thing. It's the boats.
You would assume so, but that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Major cities, I think in the west of the Netherlands, they have canals, okay. like Amsterdam, but also Utrecht, Delft, Den Haag. Most of them have the canals, but boats are really expensive.
Really? And
especially the fuel that you need to put in the boats, mm-hmm. it makes it only available to the very select and rich. So most people don't own a boat because they just cannot afford it. So that yeah. means that they're either the bike.
Yes. The
bike. That's the number one way yes. of transporting yourself in the Netherlands.
Yes. I think one of the articles said you guys have more bikes than people. And if
yes.
you said it's like 17 million people, then that's more than that in bikes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I mean, it is green because I do know an article recently came out that is, it's either already happened or it's projected to happen that wind power over in the Netherlands is going to power virtually, if not all of the public transportation coming up soon. Like, I think it might have been 2021. Mm-hmm. That's a future projection. So in that aspect, you guys are probably well ahead of any other country in the world.
Definitely. The city where I am living, which is mm-hmm. called Arnhem, we mm-hmm. are very special because as the only city in the Netherlands, we still have a trolley system. That means that all our buses are connected to an electricity line, and they run solely on electricity. Mm-hmm. And it used to be in a lot of cities, but Arnhem is the only one that still has the old system. So running buses on electricity is already a very old concept here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there was another thing I was looking at of, I want to say it's another thing that they're trying to pass in the Netherlands in like the next few years, where gasoline, might not be gasoline, but gas, definitely diesel. I do remember we're being considered diesel cars are going to be banned.
Yes.
Nationwide. Yes. So yeah, that leaves, I'm guessing, bikes, obviously, is huge mode over there. For those who can afford boats, and then what, is it going to be like electrical cars? And is there some other mode that you guys have that I didn't look at?
Most cars in the Netherlands actually run on benzene. So they don't use diesel. Diesel is more for countries that are bigger because you need to do a lot of miles. You know, I think from Amsterdam to Germany, it might be 150 kilometers. And then from the south of the Netherlands until the top, I think 300 kilometers, and then you've had the entire country. So we don't drive large distances. So diesel is only used by people who are on the road a lot, because otherwise it's not economical, because the road taxes that you need to pay, we pay road taxes. Okay. They are astronomically higher for diesel cars than they are for benzene cars. So most of our cars run on benzene and they won't be banned. But the uprising of electrical cars is huge here in the Netherlands.
Yes. Benzene, what is that?
Yeah, it's, how do you explain it? In Dutch we call it benzene, in Italian it's benzina. It's petrol.
Oh, I just looked up, it's gasoline from what I just... Okay. Gotcha.
Yes.
All right. So one of the things I looked into that I've known about to an extent, but never really dived much into it, is the Christmas tradition of Sinterklaas. So we here in America...
It's not a Christmas tradition.
But...
It's separate.
We yes. So it's in December. It's celebrated on December 5th, if I recall right. But we as America, Coca-Cola changed it, took inspiration from Sinterklaas, and is how we have today Santa Claus over here. So what is, can you speak on a little bit about the origins and the differences? Because I'm assuming you know about Santa Claus. Everyone knows about Santa Claus at this point, right?
Yes.
What are the differences between Sinterklaas and Santa Claus?
Well, originally, and that's also where the discussion is over right now in the Netherlands, but originally it comes from Saint Nick.
Yes.
Saint Nick was a protection saint. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with slaves. And if you had been bad, then they threatened to put you into a bag. And if you had been good, you would be rewarded. So it was a system to keep the slaves into place and to make them do whatever you wanted to do. Basically, that's how it originally started. And that's also why Saint Nick, Sinterklaas, is white. And all the peats that he has, we call them black peats. They are black, obviously, because those were the slaves. And that's also the discussion that's now going on. Is it racist?
Yes.
But for us, it has nothing to do anymore with slavery and racism. It's the tradition for children. Mm. Sinterklaas is really a children fest. And it's about who's been naughty and who's been nice. So that's really a big parallel to Santa Claus.
Yes.
And it's also the gifts that come into the bag and that are presented from the bag, and Sinterklaas doesn't come through the chimney. He comes through the door, but he takes his peats with him, his helpers, and they throw candy at the children, and they give them presents.
Yeah,
and that's where it's originally from. So the differences are that he doesn't have a sleigh; he rides a big white horse.
Okay. Okay.
And he comes with a steamboat, not a flying sled.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
He doesn't go through the chimney. He enters through the door.
Okay. Go ahead.
Children are being asked to put their shoe in front of the fireplace so that Sinterklaas can put their gifts in the shoe. And they also leave a carrot for his horse.
I'm assuming that's how, when America changed it into Santa Claus, that's where stockings then came from, because, you know, it's usually you hang stockings in, the on the mantle of the fireplace. Carrots, though. Well, before I get into carrots, because you guys have a rich history of carrots, yes. Oddly enough, for people who don't know this, like carrots? Yes, we'll get to that in a second. For over there in the Netherlands, then, is the Americanized tradition of Christmas and Santa Claus followed through over there, or is it y'all like, nope, you guys have that, we're sticking with Santa Claus?
No, we now have two.
Oh, really?
We have Santa Claus 5 December, we have Santa Claus with Christmas. So the children get double presents in the month of December.
Man.
So you can imagine that the month of December is a very expensive month for Dutch parents.
Yeah, my son, his birthday's in November. So right there is close enough. I'm like, oh, you got to pick what you want. You're getting clothes one for one of them, and then you're getting your toys for the other. You pick which one you want. It's basically how that goes.
But
you mentioned they leave a carrot as well.
Yes.
So we can get into that. The royal family of in the Netherlands is called the House of Orange, correct?
Yes.
And the reason that we have carrots today in the color of orange is because when the Dutch fought for their independence back, you probably remember the date. I know I don't. But the House of Orange won. And essentially, from what I gathered, the farmers and whatnot, as tribute to the king, cultivated and breeded their carrots, which originally were purple, white, and they were various colors.
Yes.
Eventually cultivated and breeded them to an orange color for the House of Orange. And to the point it became so popular and so widespread around the world, that's the carrot we know today.
Orange is the nation's color. So yes. It's actually the House of Oranje Nassau. So not just orange, but Oranje is orange.
Okay.
The House of Orange Nassau. The family name is Nassau, but Nassau fell away and then orange remained. And every year when we celebrate nowadays the birthday of the king, before we celebrated the birthday of the queen, we call it King's Day. Everybody dresses in orange. Your shirt is orange, your accessories are orange, everything is orange, and
my hair is orange. I'm good there.
yes you fit right in also with the rest of your colors, because the nation's colors are red, white, and blue. But then orange is the color of the kingdom, the queen and the king.
I remember reading, I don't know how long ago, that like the corn that we know today was yellow corn, isn't the original corn that was cultivated over breeding of years and years ago. It was kind of like carrots. They were a variety of colors. Corn back in the day was a variety of colors as well. To know that because of that, the royal family winning its independence for the Netherlands is how the whole world got orange carrots. That's a cool little thing to have.
Yes.
You know, for your country, you are worldwide now. Even if people don't know it,
big footprint.
Exactly, huge footprint, man. Because I guarantee you, if I was to pull any random American off the street, hey man, you know where orange carrots come from? They wouldn't know a thing.
Supermarket.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. The ground. What do you mean, guy? Like, no. Let me tell you something. I was also looking into strange laws, or at least it's going to be strange compared to us, right? Because for you guys, you born and raised in the Netherlands, it's just the world you live in. But from someone on the outside, it's going to be a very unique thing. Everyone knows of Amsterdam and the stuff you can do over there. I'm not going to get into that. But there is a lot of stuff that you actually can't do over there that probably some people think is legal. It's not. I'm just going to say that right now. That's nothing like beer. I don't do either of those anyway, so I'm not worried about that. But one of the unique things, and it says it's not really enforced, but house sharing is illegal.
Yes.
Can you explain as to why? Because I'm reading three or more people is technically not allowed.
Yes, it has to do both with safety. Mm-hmm. So it depends on how big the house is and how many exits you have. Okay. But it also depends on if you own the house, yes or no, because the bank has a say in how many people can live in it. And you cannot rent it out or share it with people that you ask money to share your house with. So you can live, obviously, with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your spouse and your children. Yes. So in that regard, you can share your house. Yes. But there's actually the law is in place to prevent overcrowding and to prevent you renting your house out to 30 different people at the same town and then not being able to guarantee everybody's safety anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense when you put it for like in a safety... For safety reasons, it definitely makes sense for sure. I think over here, I know it's probably rules against that if you're renting a place. But to go as far as like a law, I think it's why it's odd for an outsider to hear that.
Here we love laws. It's ridiculous. They even wanted to make a law that it's forbidden to buy too much soda, or a law that it's forbidden to buy too much red meat in the supermarket.
Yeah.
We can go a little overboard.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, I think I know up in New York, they banned sugary drinks in like schools at least, which I mean, you know, I don't live in New York, so I ain't got to worry about that. But a lot of kids don't need all that sugar. I'll leave it at that, you know.
Yes, definitely.
That definitely is health. Exactly. So I'd be okay with that law if it happened to come down here. I'd be cool with it. Yeah. Another thing you guys have that we don't is you have the mandatory drills once a month.
The mandatory what?
Drills, like the alarm.
Oh yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That has to do with the First and the Second World War. Mm-hmm, so the sirens are there to test if they function, obviously, and if we can warn everybody, because the war, especially the Second World War, had a very, very big impact on our country. And this is a way of protecting the country. But I think if I was an invading country that wanted to attack this country, I would do it at the first of the month.
Right.
Monday, because we are so used to that being nobody will even look up or take action.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was reading, was there were some, I guess, amendments going through courts over there to try and get it changed because of that reason. Because, you know, like you said, God forbid something happens on that Monday, everyone's just going to go about their business thinking, oh, here we go again. You know,
and in the beginning, you know, right after the war, it was logical. People were scared, wanted to have a way to be warned, and it was very actual. But right now, I think we are 70 years, 75 years at least past the war. So most people that live now don't even remember the war, never actually participated in the war. So the fear is no longer there. And then it's just a nuisance. It's a lot of noise. Sucky when you need to record something.
Okay. Very true. Yeah. So
go ahead. It doesn't have the effect or the necessity that it had when it was first called into life.
Yeah, especially when back then, like, information wasn't as freely accessible like it is now. Yes. So even if you didn't have an alarm, you would kind of get an alert, whether it be through your phone or, you know, the person sitting next to you, hey, so-and-so is coming over. Exactly, yeah. Because I know at work, you know, we have fire alarm drills, you know, every now and then, earthquake drills every now and then, to the point sometimes when an alarm actually goes off, we're like, is that real? Was that a drill? You know, so we got to hope that, you know, when it actually comes down that it's,
we really need to leave?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Another weird thing that I found unique about the Dutch and Netherlands is, so I know a lot of people like to, if you have the money to do it, and let's say you're engaged, you want to go to somewhere nice and that looks beautiful and whatnot to get married.
Yes.
So me and my wife, obviously we're already married, so I ain't got to worry about that. But if we were engaged and, hey, you know, we saw a picture in the Netherlands, hey, babe, you want to go get married there? and we booked a plane ticket, and we flew over there and all that kind of stuff, and all right, we're here to get married. That would not happen.
Nope, that would not happen. Not in such a place. You can get married at City Hall, for instance, but okay. If you want to book such a place, then you need to prepare in advance and book it, yes.
Yeah, because you can't get married in the Netherlands unless either you or the other person is from there, is Dutch.
Yes, that is also the case.
So, but okay, I would assume honeymoon's got to be a thing then, because I mean, it is a beautiful country over there. So if me and my wife, because we want to do our honeymoon in Scotland. And if we can, it would be, yes, whenever this thing's over with, I'm flying somewhere. Hopefully we're going to get to do it. But it would be cool, you know, take a little trip from country to country to country and all that kind of stuff. If I can hop into the Netherlands and visit some of the museums that you guys have, I want to see the cube houses. I know that for sure. I would love to do that and just explore, you know?
Yeah.
So what are some of the foods, like some of the famous foods that the Netherlands have? Because I had a few pulled up and some of them looked really good. One of them, biscuits and mice. I remember that one. Does biscuits and mice ring a bell?
No.
Okay. I'll try and find it here real quick. It was something to do with...
are from the winter time.
Okay. Let's see. If I remember, I had something to do with after the birth of a child, Dutch families celebrate with a sweet and colorful treat.
Now I know what you mean.
Okay. Yes,
that is indeed a tradition. Whenever a child is born, you give them, we call it beschuit met muisjes.
Okay.
And indeed, it's you can translate it to biscuit and mouses. Yes, I didn't make the connection, but
I got
you. For a girl, then the mouse, they are anise, for basically, and they come in either pink or blue.
Yes.
So the pink ones naturally will be indicating a girl, and the blue ones naturally will be indicating a boy. And it's tradition to share that with your co-workers, for instance, and also friends and family that come to visit the mother and the newborn child, to give them that as a way of celebrating the new life that came into the world.
Okay, that's cool. Because I know, we have cakes and cupcakes with like the cream filling, blue or pink cream filling. I wouldn't say a tradition on this side of the country. But one of the most weirder ones that I found food-wise is raw herring ice cream.
Yeah, yes, that indeed is very, very weird. Dutch people, I am not one of them, actually. Okay. I always feel like an imposter Dutch person. But most Dutch people... the thing that they would love to eat is a herring with onion. And then they pull their head back and then they just...
Yes! I saw...
Yes. My reaction, exactly. But it's such a huge favorite for most people that live here that they decided to put it into an ice cream flavor. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, I didn't watch a video, but I did see a picture of a guy. I don't like seafood. I don't like onions. So that's a no for me.
I also like onions, but that combination when something slithers down your throat.
Yes. But one of the things that you guys are also famous for, and might not be you, but Netherlands, the love of licorice apparently is a thing over there.
Yes, I hate it actually, but it's something that most people indeed love to do. And I remember when I was in primary school, that we needed to do like a talk about one of your favorite subjects and present it to the class. And there was this girl that did her talk about licorice, and she said, everybody loves licorice. And I was like raising my finger.
Yeah, you know? Nope.
And it's also a tradition, and it comes in both salty flavor and sweet flavor, and then you can also add other stuff to it. Mm-hmm. And it's a real treat for most people that live here. Yeah.
Well, I'm with you. Same with seafood. Same with licorice. That is not a thing for me. No. So what are some uniquely Netherland foods that you do enjoy?
Well, the thing that I really enjoy is called a stroopwafel. So okay. That means that you have a very thin biscuit, two actually, and in between it, there's a layer of...
I know exactly what you're talking about. What is it? No, go ahead. I think I know what you're talking about.
It's a layer of hardened syrup, like maple syrup, then not liquid anymore, but a little bit hardened. And then it becomes like a cookie. And that is just delicious. It's one of my absolute favorites in the Netherlands.
So it's a very, very...
Yes, very thin.
Can you spell it out for me real quick?
It's a stroopwafel. So S-T-R-O-O-P.
O-O-P? Yes! Yes! We had some friends over, had some bags of candy and all that kind of good stuff, and opened out one of them, and it was a stroopwafel. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And I was like, huh, I've never seen this. It looked fancy. The packaging was definitely fancy looking. And I had it, and I was like, oh, this You're is right. so good.
A bite of heaven.
Oh, man. So, yes, I've only had that one, but either my wife or the friend we had over said they sell them, you know, at some other store down the road. So I definitely want, but I don't want to get addicted because those, whoo.
Yeah, and here in the Netherlands, you can also get them warm. So then they are liquid, and that's even better, you know. The cold ones are already fantastic, but the warm ones, whoo!
Oh, man, you're making me hungry. Babe, we're going to get lunch soon. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
My wife's in the other room.
Does she deliver overseas?
Right? Like, hey, I'll send you my address. It might take a month or so. It won't be warm, but hey. So what kind of like regular, because that's technically like a dessert snack thing, correct?
Yes.
So what about like a regular like dinner meal, lunch meal?
Well, a dinner meal, I have two that I actually like. Mm-hmm. I used to love what we call boerenkool as a child. So it's boer translating to farmer. And okay. Kool, it's kale. Mm-hmm. You call it kale in the States.
Kale?
Yes, kale.
Okay.
And we then cook, what do you call them? Potatoes. Mm-hmm. And then we mash the potatoes with the kale. And then we add something that's very unique also to the Netherlands. And it's called a rookworst. So it's a smoked sausage, but a very typically smoked sausage. Everybody knows the brand Unox, for instance. It's the most famous one in the Netherlands. And then you add it to it, and then you add gravy. And that combination that's what I said before, it's a wintry meal. And the other one that we are very famous for that I also really love, we call it pea soup. And you make it with split peas, green split peas.
Yeah.
So the same smoked sausage in it. And then the bulb part of celery. In combination with carrots, and you cook it until it becomes like this very thick soup that you can actually put a spoon straight up in, but the flavor, it's indescribable. It's very delicious.
All right. I'm a big foodie. I know one, if you can see, I have a pizza shirt. I love pizza. And pizza, it's so unique because every culture can adopt it and make it their own, you know, with their own topping. Yeah. So I have a group of the people I've spoken to in the past, like, hey, send me your country's version of, you know, your favorite pizza over there. So I'm eventually like gonna get a grocery list and try and like recreate the stuff here at the house.
But that's the problem actually with Dutch people, because we don't take something and make it our own. We keep it as is. So we are the only country in Europe that doesn't dub over series and movies in our own language. So every series and every movie that you see on television here is in the original language.
Yeah.
It's American, English, German, French, Spanish, it doesn't matter. We then get Dutch subtitles.
Okay.
But it's never dubbed over. And all the other countries, they dub it over in their own language.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's what we do here. And pizza here is a traditional Italian pizza or an American pizza. We have both. American pizza or traditional Italian. So there is no Dutch pizza. So all the dishes that are here are actually very authentic to the country that they originally come from.
Okay, that is very unique. Do you think you know why that is?
I think because we are a very small country. So in our school system, we learn 5 languages mandatory. So we learn Dutch, but we also learn English, German, French, and Spanish. Because let's face it, nobody really speaks Dutch outside of the Afrikaans a little, and that's it.
Yes.
So in order to trade, because we are very big on trading and conquering the world, we needed to adapt and also speak other languages. So from a very young age, we learned to speak a lot of languages so that we can connect with the rest of the world. And that's also, I think, why we keep everything the way it is, because for us it is very important to learn about other people's cultures, other people's traditions, because if you are a tradesman and you want to trade or you want to sell something to other countries, other people in those countries, then what better way is there than to actually connect with those people in their language, with their dishes and their traditions?
That I love that, and I'm very jealous. I'm very, very jealous. So right now, you're saying you know 5 different languages, if not more.
No, I know 7, actually.
I'm about to say, I'm assuming at this point you know more as well. So you know those 5.
Yes.
What other 2?
I'm speaking Italian, and I am now teaching myself Persian, or also called Farsi.
Oh. Because I want to know 5 other languages. I want to know Spanish, obviously. Japanese, Mandarin, German, and Russian. I figured those are 5 really big languages. So I want to know those at some point. I haven't started. I know bits and pieces here and there. But that's something I want to do. That's definitely a goal for me that I want to achieve at some point. But I'm very jealous of that though, for like, honestly, because here, but the only time we take an extra language, at least in the school system I grew up in down here in the South, is you can choose to have a second language. And for my high school, it was Spanish or French. But at the same time, you can also go like to often and learn a trade. So I went off and did welding. So I learned welding my last 2 years of high school. So I wasn't required to take a second language. I feel like definitely missed out. You know, I did enjoy welding. My wife probably can speak Spanish pretty well. Like, if we were to go somewhere, hey, babe, what are they saying? You know, I'd let her take over.
Awesome.
Yeah, so at least somebody in this family is, you know, going somewhere. I'm not. But I love how even with that, like, the culture of the Dutch is so ingrained into knowing that, hey, there's more than just us here, right? Like you said, you know, they're conquered a lot back in the day, but even to this day, they still respect it enough to not change it, I guess, is really a good way of putting it.
It's become a tradition and it's just the way it is.
And that's awesome. That's awesome because we are not that way.
That's also how you can recognize Dutch people when we are somewhere outside of our country. Okay. I experienced it firsthand when I was in Sri Lanka. I was there for a retreat. And all the other people there were either German or from Switzerland. And they kept speaking German. even though the people from Sri Lanka don't speak German.
Yeah.
And they have never learned English, so they also don't speak English, and they keep speaking their own language. And that's what most countries in Europe do. The French only speak French, the Spanish only speak Spanish, the Italians only speak Italian. They don't even speak English. They don't learn English in their school system as well. And they keep speaking it wherever they go.
Yeah.
But Dutch people, when I was in Sri Lanka, I asked them, how do I say hello in your language? Mm-hmm. How do I say thank you in your language? How do I greet you in your language?
Yes.
Then they teach me those words, and I make an effort to use those words whenever I encounter them. Mm-hmm. And then you see those people light up, and it's like, wow, you take an interest in me and my language and my culture, and that's just amazing. So that's instant connection right there.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's... that's one reason why I do, why I'm doing these type of podcasts right now, just to broaden my horizons and learn a little bit. And because again, in the education system here, it's really America centric, right? It's what we did, what we do, you know, where we came from, you know, it's obviously, you know, the American Revolution and how we came from Britain and all that kind of stuff and other people. But that's about as far as it goes. And when we take on something, we make it our own, you know? And this is to the point we make it so our own, to the point we don't even recognize where it originally came from.
Yes.
And it's detrimental. It's very detrimental to those countries where whatever the case is came from. Because I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know there were a few instances that I've learned of stuff that we adopted from some other country. And the whole time, I'm 30, and for 30 years, I thought this was out. It was our thing. Coming to find out it came from, you know, so-and-so, and I'm like, they never taught us that.
No.
They never showed us any of that. It was like, oh, here we are, blah, 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 America, You know? And that goes into, in my opinion, that goes into kind of what you do professionally with your empathy and being okay with who you are, no matter how odd you are, you know, because a lot of, I'm trying to figure out how to word it, but a lot of the way that I've grown to, I guess, I've always known it's a thing here in America, but it's become a more highlighted norm, I guess you can say, for this country, is it's so narrow-minded, right? I don't really want to say narrow-minded, but I do want to say narrow-minded.
Maybe limited.
Limited. I like that. Limited. That is slightly nicer than narrow-minded. But yes, very limited into... just like that, you know, there's so much stuff that we've adopted from everywhere, all over the place, and we made it our own, to where we don't even recognize where it originally came from. We don't, you know, it's our way or the highway, basically.
Maybe, and it's bigger and better is what we get taught about America. They make things bigger and better.
That was probably the case at one point. I don't know. I don't know, it's kind of iffy with what's going on over here right now.
But maybe.
Hopefully, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, so I'll go ahead and wrap this up. I think altogether we've done about an hour here, Barbara. So once again, I want to thank you a lot for reaching out and talking with me about the Netherlands. I would love at some point though to you have your own podcast, right?
Yes, definitely.
And it's about your helping other people realize whatever about them, correct?
Yes, it's called the 100% Yourself with Barbara.
100% Yourself with Barbara. Folks, if you're listening, watching, look out for that. I want to come on at some point.
Awesome.
And even though I feel my odd quirks, I use them to my advantage, it did take a while for me to accept that. But I want to hear more. I definitely want to hear more. So go ahead, plug 100% Yourself with Barbara and anything else you have going on.
Awesome. I just send you the link. It's the last page of my website. And there's also a form that you can fill in to be on my podcast.
Okay.
I'd love to have you.
All right. I appreciate it. So Barbara, you have yourself a good rest of your evening. I'm about to go get some lunch with the wife because talking about Stroopwafel and everything else has got me hungry.
Yeah, I'm hungry. I'm going to get myself some dinner soon.
There you go. You have yourself a good day, Barbara.
Thank you so much for having me, Jamie, and I wish you a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Bye.